You're listening to Turkish Football Weekly, available on the World Football Daily Club podcast feed. If you're a member of World Football Daily, you can go to the site and stream the show anytime to your computer, mobile phone, or tablet without having to download or sync anything. If you're not a member of World Football Daily, just search World Football Daily Club podcast in the iTunes store and download the World Football Daily Club podcast feed for free. Enjoy the show. Everyone, and welcome to Turkish Football Weekly for the week of August 8th, 2013. My name is Atadiz Dar, and joining me once again is Jeremy Chapman. Jeremy, how was your week this week?
Not bad, Atta, thanks. A decent week all around. Been just making some plans. I'll be in Boston this weekend and in Maine, so that's exciting. Gonna hang out with some old Turkish friends of mine, and then actually, the ones who sort of got it all started, got me all started in my Turkish football interest. So go hang out with them and then go see some family up on the main coast. But how was your week?
Pretty uneventful. Just watched a few matches here and there, although the CONCACAF Champions League is not being broadcasted here in the States for some reason. At least I can't find it. But yeah, I know that you're a native New Englander, so it's always fun to get back to your parents and just see them, see how everybody's doing. And I guess that'll be it for the introduction. Let's move into the matches for the UEFA Champions League third qualifying round and Europa League third qualifying round. We'll start off with the Champions League third qualifying round between Fenerbahce and Red Bull Salzburg. Fenerbahce beating Red Bull Salzburg 3-1 in the second leg, thereby winning 4-2 on aggregate. Now, there was a moment of silence before the game to memorialize former Fenerbahce captain Selçuk Yula, who had died earlier that day of a heart attack. Yula had scored 134 goals for Fenerbahce between 1979 and 1986, so there was a moment of silence there. Jonathan Soriano got the scoring started by scoring in the fourth minute for Red Bull Salzburg, but Fenerbahce answers with three straight goals. Raul Morelis scoring in the seventh minute to tie the match, then Moussa Sow in the 17th minute, and Pierre Weibo in the 34th minute scored the additional goals for Fenerbahce. I guess it was kind of a tale of two halves. You know, Fenerbahce kind of dominated the first half after the Red Bull Salzburg goal was scored, but Salzburg had the momentum in the second half. And in the 81st minute, there were a chance of, you know, Taksim is everywhere. Everywhere is resistance. And the broadcaster, D. Smart, reportedly cut the volume of the crowd. I read this on my Twitter account, leading to the hashtag D. Smart boycott. So for Fenerbahce, it's advancing to the playoff round, so they guarantee themselves group stage football. It's only really a matter of which tournament that they will have group stage football in. Of course, this is all pending on the decision of CAS coming up later this month. But for Fenerbahce and their fans, they can celebrate an advancement over Red Bull Salzburg and perhaps the opportunity to play some very difficult teams coming up in the playoff round. And we'll explain that later.
Yeah, this game was sort of one of those games that kind of reminds you why you watch the sport. I mean, it was just a thrill ride the whole way through, I felt like. And obviously Fenerbahce not getting off to an ideal start, you know, after being scored upon in the fourth minute, but responding well and with great goals. I mean, really, if you didn't see the match or the highlights, at least see the extended highlights on this one, because it wasn't, I mean, the goals were amazing, but did you see some of those saves in the second half? I mean, it was unreal. I felt like Salzburg came about as close to scoring the two goals they needed, to tie the game. I felt like they got about as close to scoring those goals as a team could without scoring them. I mean, you know, balls off the crossbar, balls which were, you know, flying in, but a defender, you know, gets a foot to it barely and sends it over the bar. I mean, just, it was kind of a heart attack, but in a good way, the whole end of the game, especially. But this was just a fantastic match. Fenerbahce did very well here. Volkan Demirel was, I thought he was quite impressive in this match as well. So check out the highlights, obviously, and I hope this is a sign of things to come for Fenerbahce in further competitions, especially when we find out who they get drawn with, for the playoff round. But I guess we'll find that out tomorrow, which will be too late for the sake of the podcast. But those games won't happen for a couple weeks, so we'll be able to talk about it next week. But I don't know, man. I'm excited to watch this Fener team playing after that game. I mean, it was just so much different than the first leg, right?
And Raul Morelos had an injury. He had to be subbed off in the first half. Alper Putzuk replaced him, I believe. But I was trying to watch the extended highlights, but wherever this place where I was at, this coffee shop I was at, you know, with the Wi-Fi, just, I don't know, for some weird reason, YouTube isn't responding to me these days. So I have to go home and try and watch the highlights. But, you know, Fenerbahce, they will be unseated in the playoff round of the Champions League. And again, by the time everybody listens to this, everybody will have found out, you know, who Fenerbahce is playing, and obviously Trabzonspor, who they're playing, and Beşiktaş, who they're playing in the Europa League playoff round. A little bit of spoilers right there. But yeah, I mean, Fenerbahce, as far as we know, as of the recording of this podcast, they got to face either Arsenal, Lyon, Milan, Schalke, or Zenit St. Petersburg. And, you know, all of those teams are a very tough task.
Yeah, there's sort of an interesting question that arises here, because those two legs are scheduled to be played late August. The dates, I hope we find out the specific dates when the draw happens. I guess we will. But, the second leg will happen either on the 27th or 28th of August. I believe that CAS hearing is also on the 28th, but I imagine earlier in the day. So it's possible, as far as what we know at this moment, that Fenerbahce might not even be allowed to play the second leg of this match, or maybe CAS will acquit them of the charges and they will. But it's a very murky sort of situation right now, and especially if that second leg gets scheduled for the 28th, it'll create a cloud, I think, just hanging over the matchup. There are a bunch of weird situations which can arise, but I guess we'll probably talk more about that next week when we actually know a little bit more about it. But it's definitely something that I think we wish we didn't have to think about.
Right. Now, CAS is supposed to make their decisions on the 28th of August for both Fenerbahce and Beşiktaş. And as far as I know, if the CAS decision comes out before the second leg, then if Fenerbahce does get banned, if their ban is upheld by CAS, then whoever they drew with goes right into the Champions League group stages via a walkover. So,
but it's interesting, because Fenerbahce could finish the second leg the day before they actually have the hearing, and therefore, you know, let's say Fenerbahce beats whoever they're drawn with on aggregate, and that, so they've eliminated this team, and then let's say CAS boots them, right? And then it's like, well, do they bring back that team that Fenerbahce beat? I mean, I guess. I don't know. I mean, I guess UEFA could do whatever they want, I suppose, but it'd just be a weird situation, right? Imagine you're a team that gets whooped or at least defeated, and then the opponent gets booted, but it's after you've already been eliminated. I guess that kind of thing's happened before, but I guess my point here is, like, there's just a lot of weird things that could happen as a result of the timing, I guess,
right,
of this.
Let me cut you off there for a little bit, because Fenerbahce has actually guaranteed themselves group stage football. If they beat whoever they get drawn with in the Champions League playoff round, they go into the Champions League group stages, obviously. But if they lose in the playoff round, well, they go into the group stages of the Europa League. So that provides another conundrum there.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, I suppose if they get booted, they're booted of the competition.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. I mean, if they're booted, but then it would provide a bit of a conundrum in terms of the Europa League group stage spot, because whoever loses in the playoff round of the Champions League, at this point, whoever loses would be automatically entered into the Europa League group stages. So that's a bit of a conundrum there. But it depends on what UEFA decides what to do. But really, everything is on CAS. And obviously, we had reported a few weeks ago that the CAS decision will come on the 28th of August, later this month. It could come out even sooner than that, but we'll see what happens there. Let's move on to the Europa League third qualifying round, the second leg. We'll start off with the Bursaspor-Vojvodina match first. Vojvodina, some people might call this an upset. They beat Bursaspor 3-0 and win the tie 5-2 on aggregate. Aboubakar Umaru in the 9th minute, Stonhan Vranis in the 29th minute, and Andrija Kaloudarević in the 83rd minute, scoring the goals for Vojvodina. And right after the third goal, the Bursaspor fans were chanting for the board and coach Hikmet Karaman to resign. He even gave Vojvodina a nice applause off the field. And this looked really, really bad for Bursaspor. And whoever was saying on my Twitter timeline that Sebastian Fry was a pretty bad signing, or Fry had like really slow reactions, I'm starting to think that Fry might be a bust signing for Bursaspor. I mean, it just doesn't look too good for Bursaspor right now. I mean, I know that they had tried to, make some signings because they thought with Fenerbahce getting barred, with Beşiktaş also getting barred, that they would be moving up into the Champions League qualifying rounds. But instead, what we see is, Bursaspor had to go back to the Europa League. They only assumed that they did, but UEFA never made an official announcement pertaining to that. But getting eliminated by Vojvodina, I mean, maybe this is a case of like a Turkish team didn't take a team that they've never heard of seriously. I mean, you see that in Turkey that they, heard of the major teams, but when it comes to these sorts of teams, they tend to underestimate them. And maybe this seems like one of those classic Turkish club underestimations where they underestimate a team that they really don't know anything about. And kudos to Vojvodina, they beat Bursaspor pretty handily. And thank you for playing Bursaspor, but they've been eliminated. And I think Hikmet Karaman came out after the match and said, if the conditions were normal, I mean, we probably would have beaten this team. But you take a look at the scoreline, Vojvodina, I mean, congratulations to them. But Bursaspor, I mean, it's kind of scary, I mean, with the way they've been playing throughout these two legs, what are they going to do for the upcoming season? Because it doesn't really look too good for them right now.
Yeah, and Bursaspor really, I mean, in general, that club, they need to make at least a little bit of a splash in Europe one of these days. I mean, it's just been flop after flop. They've only recently made it into the Champions League in 2010, 2011, so a couple stints in the Europa League. Since then, I'm not going to talk about their involvement in the European Cup Winners' Cup back in the 80s, but they're basically a new team on the European scene, and every time we've seen them, pretty much they flop. I mean, okay, they made it to the playoff round last year and the year before the Europa League, but that was only as far as they got. I think you're right. I mean, they definitely didn't revere this club, Vojvodina, appropriately, but it's, even if you're playing a team that you haven't heard of or whatever, you got to go out there and do better than this. I mean, to lose 3-0 at home, no less. I can imagine their expectations probably got out of hand, thinking that they had the thing wrapped up with the home leg. But I mean, Bursaspor is still really yet to strike fear in their European opponents. But maybe one day they'll be the Vojvodina, right? And they'll come into a tournament and a team will think they can walk all over them. But I don't know, man. I always root for these Anatolian clubs to find some kind of success in Europe. But Bursaspor is just not, they're just not going to be it this year.
Right. I mean, it's looking like whichever Anatolian team, and outside of Trabzonspor for right now, they just can't seem to really get their feet wet when it comes to European competition. I remember reading off my timeline, it just seems as though that when it comes down to whoever gets coefficient points, it's always going to be like two teams from Turkey trying to get the coefficient points. And unfortunately, with eliminations like this, it just doesn't help the country with their coefficients. Now, I'm not really that big into coefficients to begin with. I know, Jeremy, you're the one who's more into that sort of thing, but it doesn't help for Bursaspor, or any other team for that matter, basically getting whooped by a team like Vojvodina, for instance, because the Serbian league isn't like really highly ranked, so to speak. But getting this team that beats you 3-0 at home, it doesn't really look good for Turkey, as when it's perceived as a league as a whole.
Yeah, and in terms of the rankings, the coefficients, I mean, as long as a couple of our teams make it another couple stages, then that's pretty much all it takes. I mean, you don't usually expect all your teams to go through, but it almost happened, right? I mean, we almost saw all five teams remain, Galatasaray and Fenerbahce in the Champions League. They're still there, and we almost had all of the other three in the Europa League remain, but Bursaspor just couldn't handle it. I mean, and sort of went down in flames there. But I mean, we still have four teams in European competition, so in terms of the coefficients, things are probably okay at this point. But yeah, it is kind of a waste. I mean, Bursaspor is supposed to be better than
Yeah,
that.
and it's four teams at this point because obviously Fenerbahce and Beşiktaş still have to wait for CAS's ruling. But let's move on to Trabzonspor and Dinamo Minsk. Nothing really much to say about this game. It was tied nil-nil, so Trabzonspor advances with the 1-0 win on aggregate. I guess the only thing that I could really report on from this match is that Florent Malouda, the former Chelsea man, he made his debut in a Trabzonspor uniform in the 67th minute, replacing Adrian Mershevsky. But it just sounded like a boring match. I really didn't see anybody really tweeting about it, being excited about it. But Trabzonspor moves on to the playoff round, and I believe that they and Beşiktaş will be seeded teams in the UEFA Europa League playoff round draw. And again, you'll probably find out by the time you listen to this podcast who they have drawn. However, I mean, when it comes to this game, it just sounded like it was pretty boring. There really wasn't much to really write home about, but Trabzonspor advances.
Yeah, and at this point, I mean, there aren't too many menacing sides that they could get drawn with. I mean, the only team I would be sort of afraid of at this point might be, I don't know, Elfsborg or maybe one of the Swiss teams, but we'll find out who they get drawn with eventually, and I think they should be able to handle it, but maybe Bursaspor is sort of a wake-up call for the rest of the teams to be like, hey, don't take anything for granted.
Right, exactly. And I don't know. I'm kind of fearing for how Bursaspor is going to do for the season if these two games were really any indication, because they did spend a lot of money on like Taye Taiwo. I mean, they're spending good money for Sebastian Frey's services. And they assumed that they were going to be in the Champions League qualifying rounds, but there was no official announcement pertaining to that. And until CAS's decision comes out, we don't know the status of Fenerbahce and Beşiktaş at this point. But maybe I guess this is a lesson for Bursaspor. Watch your spending. I mean, I think we reported a couple weeks ago that they were going to complain about it to UEFA. Why didn't you pick us or something? But UEFA never made an official announcement. I think the lesson there is, wait until UEFA makes an official announcement as to the status of all the teams,
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so I think we've ran a little long on this segment in terms of the European action for Turkish clubs. We'll take a break here on Turkish Football Weekly. We'll talk about some news, including one transfer that made the headlines. And since we do like to talk about the women's game in Turkey a little bit, we actually do have some news coming out of the UEFA Women's Champions League. The Turkish representative Konak Belediyesi will have a report on that. And we'll see you right after the break. And welcome back to Turkish Football Weekly. Let's talk about some news going around the world of Turkish football. Karabükspor have parted ways with midfielder Selim Teber. Teber, whose contract ran through May 31st, 2014, was signed by Karabükspor last year, but only made 8 appearances for Karabükspor last season. Timur Özgöz has been signed by Sivasspor to a 2-year contract. The midfielder had been under contract with Ankaragücü since 2011. Rizespor have signed former Atletico Madrid reserve team center back Cenk Güvenç to a 2-year deal. Güvenç made no appearances for Atleti B after being signed in June of 2012. Kayseri Erciyesspor has signed right back Erhan Güven from Sivasspor to a one-year deal, and they've also signed center back Kader Magane on loan from Saudi Arabian club Al Hilal, they're based in Riyadh, for 1 year with an option to buy. Magane had played for Sunderland on loan since January of this year, but only made two appearances for the English club. Akhisar Belediyespor have signed German striker Alessandro Riedle from Grasshoppers to a two-year deal. The striker, the son of former Germany star Karl-Heinz Riedle, had been contracted with the Swiss club since 2010, but only made eight appearances for the Swiss club. Galatasaray have released winger Juan Emmanuel Culio from his contract. Culio, who was originally signed by Galatasaray in 2011, had played with Orduspor and Mersin İdmanyurdu on loan from the Istanbul club for the last two seasons. Culio received €500,000 as compensation for terminating the contract. Gaziantepspor have signed right back Uğur Kavruk to a one-year deal. The 34-year-old had been playing for Sivasspor since 2009. Gökçek Venersin has reportedly signed a one-year contract with Antalyaspor. He was released from his Bursaspor contract a few weeks ago. Former Beşiktaş captain Nazmi Bilge has died. The former forward player for Beşiktaş from 1954 through 1962 scored 158 goals in his career. It wasn't reported what Bilge had died from, but our condolences go out to Bilge and also to the family of Selçuk Yula, the former Fenerbahçe captain. Fenerbahçe have loaned winger Miroslav Stoch to PAOK in Greece for 1 year. The loan fee there is 1 million euros. And the big transfer news of the week is this. Fenerbahçe have signed forward Emmanuel Emenike from Spartak Moscow for 13 million euros. He was signed by Fenerbahçe in 2011 for 7 million euros from Karabükspor, with an additional 2 million euros paid to Karabük when Emenike was sold to Spartak Moscow. The Nigerian was sold by Fenerbahçe in 2011 during the height of the match-fixing scandal without even playing a game for the club. He was acquitted of involvement in match-fixing earlier this year. Emenike will be undergoing a medical, and the results of said medical will be completed by this coming Monday. Should he fail the medical, Emenike will be sent back to Spartak. Probably the most interesting news coming out is the Emenike story. I know Fenerbahce were rumored to be also trying to sign Oscar Cardozo from Benfica. In fact, there was rumors that a deal had been close between the two. But Emenike coming back to Fenerbahce, it's almost like everything comes full circle. Because with Emenike, I mean, 2 years ago when this podcast was covering the match-fixing scandal as it was developing at the time on the other network, which we can't name, Emenike was getting harassed by calls. I mean, there was rumors that, you know, he didn't play in the Fenerbahce game because, you know, he had already signed a pre-deal. And I was kind of thinking, you know, that sort of thing kind of happens in Bundesliga. You know, sometimes that players get signed by clubs for, you know, the next season during when a season is playing. But people were saying he faked an injury just to get out of the Fenerbahce match. And I think I remember at the time that, you know, Emenike didn't even play in the season-ending match against Trabzon. And Karabükspor and Emenike were saying that, you know, there was a doctor's note. Even the club said, we have the doctor's note that Emenike couldn't play. Now, some people believed that it was a fake doctor's note. But in my mind, I was thinking, well, if his doctor made up a note, then I would think there would be a malpractice suit coming his way from the club, at least. But, you know, Emenike, he was getting harassed by the media as to what his involvement in the match-fixing scandal was. So he basically had to get out of there. He got out of Turkey. He was on trial. He actually got acquitted earlier this year. But Fenerbahce paying 13 million euros, it does sound like an awful lot of money. But, I mean, they got basically 8 million euros for Emenike. So I guess when you think about it, if you do the math, it may not be as much as people might think. But, you know, Emenike is a proven goal scorer. And
Yeah, he's been awesome, I was going to say.
Yeah, exactly.
He scored like 30 goals in his couple of seasons at Karabükspor. He basically enabled them to get promoted. Reading now that he was voted the first league's best foreign player award of the 2009-2010 season. And then he went on to score 14 goals in the 2010-2011 Super League season for Karabükspor. The guy's awesome. It was cruel of Fenerbahce to tease him, you know, or to tease us with him like that before, but hopefully now we'll finally get to see him play, right?
Right, and I guess what we have to realize is that, you know, Emenike, you know, he did get acquitted of whatever crime he was charged with. you know, he had to be sold because obviously he couldn't have a, I guess, a good quality of life, or, you know, he just couldn't be comfortable, you know, staying in Turkey because of all the allegations against him and, you know, the whole mess of 2 years ago. So Fenerbahce had to sell him to Spartak just so he could get out of there. And, you know, when, I guess, remember, I think it was last year when Fenerbahce was playing Spartak in the UEFA Champions League playoff round, you know, he had to come back, you know, he played, and I remember him kissing then-coach Aykut Kocaman's hand when he got substituted in the home leg, or the away leg of one of those two games for Spartak. And for Emenike, I mean, I think he said, like, you know, it's kind of like I'm coming home again. This is really the country where he really made his name, whether for Karabük, and then he kind of made his name in the headlines for really maybe for all the wrong reasons or for reasons that he might not have liked getting sold to Spartak. But from what I've heard, he's been doing pretty well for Spartak since Fenerbahce sold him, and now Fenerbahce has him back. For him, it's kind of like it's this weird go-round, I guess, if you will. Doesn't even play a game for Fenerbahce. It has to be sold off to Spartak for 10 million euros, and obviously 2 million euros has to be paid to Karabük because, you know, the deal there, I believe it was 7 million euros originally, and then an additional 2 million euros if he got sold off within 3 years. So it was a total of 9 million euros, and, you know, there I've read in places that, you know, he was sold for 9 million euros, so that's where the 9 million comes from. But that's a total summation of the original transfer deal when Emenike went from Karabük to Fenerbahce, and then obviously Fenerbahce sells about the Spartak, and now they've got him back. So I guess it's more of a net of like 5 million euros, but Fenerbahce gets their guy back, so to speak. And Emenike, you know, he's still got to pass a medical, but maybe that's more of a formality at this point. You know, it was kind of like the deal with Anoramo signing for Beşiktaş as a free agent. You know, there was something in the medical, and then obviously I guess that got cleared up, so Michael Anoramo is now signed for Beşiktaş. So I guess really, I mean, this is one of those formalities, but I guess for Emenike, you know, it's almost like he's coming back to his home, if you will. You know, I think he really wanted to play for Fenerbahce when he got originally signed, but, you know, circumstances beyond his control forced a move to Russia, and he did well in Russia, so I've heard, and now he's back for Fenerbahce. So I guess now with everything in the clear and with him being acquitted of the charges that he was facing by the Turkish justice system, now he's back in Turkey, and I'm sure he's looking forward to be back in a league that he is familiar with.
Yeah, and like he was, apparently he wasn't too turned off by the experience of being arrested and having to deal with the Turkish police and that kind of thing. I mean, that could be a bit off-putting if you think about it for any foreigner, especially. You know, if I got arrested in a foreign country, I'd probably be less inclined to want to go back to it. But obviously, you know, he was acquitted and everything like that. And I was just looking up his performance in Moscow the last couple seasons. And, you know, the guy scored 21 goals for the club in 42 appearances. But, you know, they're 4 games into the season this season. And Spartak Moscow is on the top of the table right now with 3 wins and a draw. And Emenike scored 3 goals in those 4 games. I think he's third place on the top goal scorers list in Russia right now. So the guy's still got it, in case that was a question. So it, definitely an exciting transfer back, and it's a good sign that the guy clearly wants to be in Turkey. I think that's a very good sign. Really looking forward to seeing him play.
Yeah.
Hopefully he passes that medical.
Right, but I think by the time we come to this next week, he probably will have, because, you know, dude's built like a tank.
Yeah, I mean, I just wouldn't want to get my hopes all up and then have something stupid like that get in the way. But yeah,
but
definitely.
I mean, if you remember what happened with Michael Anoramo, I mean, like his first physical, you know, I think the doctors found something, and then he took another physical, and then he was cleared to play. So everything's fine with him, and I guess for this, I mean,
yeah. I'm not too worried.
Yeah, I don't think I'm too worried either. Well, I guess that'll transition to whether he will play in the Turkish Super Cup. It has been reported by several outlets that Emenike will not play in the Super Cup, which is coming up this coming Sunday as we are recording this. Fenerbahce and Galatasaray will play in Kayseri's Kadirhas Stadium. And I was reading earlier today that people who are drunk off their you-know-what are not going to be allowed into the stadium. But You know, for me, the Super Cup is really more of a preseason anti-climax. I mean, it's really just more of an overblown exhibition. I mean, it's kind of like one of those things where, yeah, the Super Cup is nice to have, but it really doesn't mean anything in the much grander picture. So I'm just saying I'm probably not going to watch this. I mean, I'm probably not going to go out of my way to watch this game because it's kind of the preseason anti-climax, but I guess the real interest that I would have in terms of watching this game is really more or less how the crowd's going to be, considering all the politics going on, obviously with the protests. You know, there are still some protests popping up here and there in Istanbul. And, you know, we saw it in the Fenerbahce match they had with Red Bull Salzburg in Kadıköy. People were chanting, Her Taksim, Her Direniş. You know, everywhere is Taksim, everywhere is resistance. So it's going to be interesting to see whether the fans, whether it be Fenerbahce or Galatasaray, will start chanting political slogans. You know, that's really the bigger interest that I have if I was going to watch this game, because, you know, the political climate is really tense right now. You know, people might accuse like one club of being close to the AKP, the other might be accusing the other club of being too close with what people in Turkey are calling the Darbeciler, or the coup mongers, or, you know, the Çapulciler, the marauders. You know, that was Tayyip Erdogan's words, I believe, the prime minister's words for the protesters, you know. And I don't think anybody, and if you've been reading any of the news coming out of Turkey in terms of, you know, all the protests, I don't think anybody's going to try and kill anybody with telekinesis, if you will. You know what I mean? I mean, I don't know if you've been reading the stories coming out from the AKP politicians, but I guess really it's not really going to be more of the on-field action that I'm going to be interested in, but more of the action in the stands. You know, I mean, will the taboo of chanting political slogans be broken? And I think last week I was explaining this. If you make something taboo, and then you know maybe people will be more encouraged to do something in order to defy the law. I mean, I kind of compare it to, like, you know, alcohol. I mean, I know in Turkey the legal age of drinking is 18, at least the last time I checked, and you know how over here, Jeremy, it's like 21. You know, some states it might be different, but usually it's 21. And I'm thinking, I know like 18 to 21-year-olds are probably going to be drinking in college and things like that, you know. So, I mean, if you make something taboo, it might encourage the people to chant it more to defy the law because it's the cool thing to do, quote unquote. But like I said earlier, I'm really not going to be interested in terms of the match itself. I'm going to be more interested to see what the fans will chant.
To me, I think it'll be weird, actually, if they don't chant political slogans, actually. I mean, I don't really know how taboo the chanting is, but it seems like these days the norm is to chant. And, I mean, you know, we were talking about during the game, you know, with Salzburg, the chanting happening. I think this will be really interesting because it's the first time we'll see Galatasaray fans and Fenerbahce fans together in a football stadium since they got together on the streets of Istanbul, joined in protest. So, and I think it'll be easier for those fans to get together and make anti-government chants in the Super Cup, as opposed to if one of them was hosting a derby, right? Because they'll have roughly equal representation at Kadir Has. Although I don't know how segregated it will be. I imagine it'll be a much different atmosphere than last year's Super Cup, which of course featured Galatasaray and Fenerbahce. But it's, as I recall, the crowd was a bit rowdier than I expect they'll be this time anyway. So I think you're right. It'll be interesting to see this mainly because of what happens with the fans and how that whole scene looks. I think it'll be something that we're not used to seeing. And hopefully it's a good game, too. Last year's finished 3-2 off a penalty kick in the 90th, so I would hope for similar entertainment here. I'm not as negative about the Turkish Super Cup, I'll tell you that. I mean, I think I treat it more like an appetizer before the season, really. And it's, yeah, it's relatively meaningless, but it's kind of a way to get ready, yeah. I think. So I'll be watching it for one, but I'll also be watching the crowd. I think that'll be interesting. So that's on Sunday the 11th at 9 p.m. in Turkey.
Yeah, so it'll be 2 o'clock on the east coast of the United States. And that will be interesting to see how the crowd reacts. And, you know, I know that in Fenerbahce's game during the Red Bull Salzburg match, you know, there were some people chanting, "We don't want politics in the stadiums." Well, I think it's pretty much inevitable that there is going to be political slogans in the stadiums, and no matter what the government does to try and bar them, I don't think people are really going to be listening to that, because I believe that, you know, there are some people, some parties within Turkey that feel empowered because, you know, their voices are trying to get heard. You know, the protests are, you know, protesters are trying to make their voices heard. And, you know, you never know. I mean, in a football match, I mean, it could be that the voices might be heard, and, you know, people from around the world are probably going to try and watch this through various means. I'm not going to really get into what kind of means, but political chants, they're probably going to be a big part of this season, I think. And
yeah, I'd be willing to bet the fans at this game will be more focused on the chanting and the yeah, sort of the whole experience of being there than the game itself to a great extent. But you know, I don't know. We'll have to see what the news is out of it. But that's kind of what I'm predicting, and what I'll certainly be watching for. But I think you're right. You know, this might be sort of the theme of this season, even. Right. Is politics and football. Right.
And the schedule for the first weekend came out this past week, but I think it probably is best if we save that for next week, because obviously the league will be starting up next weekend, I believe, right?
Well, yeah, it'll be a week from this weekend. So do you know who the first game's going to be? I haven't seen the schedule.
I'll send you the schedule after we stop recording, but I know the Beşiktaş Trabzonspor match will be played on Sunday. Fenerbahce plays on Saturday. Galatasaray plays on Monday, but I'll go into more details about that next week, because then obviously the season will have started then. So,
right.
But let's conclude the podcast this week with some good news out of European football for Turkish clubs. More on the feminine side of football, if you will. We'll talk about the UEFA Women's Champions League. Congratulations has to go out to Konak Belediyesi. They beat NSA Sofia of Bulgaria 2-0 in their first match in the qualifying round of the UEFA Women's Champions League. This match was held at the Asim Ferhatovic Hase Stadion in Sarajevo. Konak Belediyesi is the third Turkish club to now win in the Women's Champions League, following Trabzonspor's women's team and Ataşehir Belediyespor, Sibel Duman and Sevgi Çınar in the 9th and 75th minutes respectively, scoring the goals for Konak. They play SFK Sarajevo next on August 10th. That's a couple of days as of the recording of this podcast. And will conclude against Cardiff City on August 13th. So, good way to start off for the ladies of Konak Belediyesi, getting a win. But I believe they have to play the home team, if you will, SFK 2000 Sarajevo, coming up next. And that should be a tough match. You know, obviously, we don't know too much about the European women's game. But congratulations does have to go out to Konak Belediyesi for winning a match, becoming the third team to do so, the third women's football team from Turkey to do so in the UEFA Women's Champions League. But I find this interesting, and I actually thought about it earlier today. I was thinking, oh, crap, the Women's Champions League have gotten started. I've got to see how Konak did, and congratulations to them. 2-0 win, and they got 3 points, but two tough matches coming up against Sarajevo and Cardiff City.
Yeah, and, you know, Sarajevo destroyed Cardiff City 3-0, so they might be an easier opponent than the home crowd, SFK 2000, which is, to me, just sounds like a computer virus, but they are deadly. So, yeah, I mean, just kind of recap, I mean, Konak Belediyespor, Belediyesi is in a group of four, and whenever you're in that sort of group of four situation where there's one match with each of the other teams, I mean, it's critical just to not lose the first match. That's why, like, when the World Cup happens, you get the groups of four, you have a lot of scoreless draws and so forth, usually in a lot of the first games, because all the teams are pretty much just trying not to lose. But, you know, Konak Belediyesi, kudos to them for coming out and just getting the win here. It's going to be tough. Actually, you know, I was thinking earlier today, these women are badass. Like, look at this. They played earlier today. They played like a few hours ago. And now their next leg, this one we were talking about with Sarajevo, it's on Saturday. Like, they get 2 days. I mean, I ran 3 miles 2 days ago and I can still barely walk. And these people are going to play. I mean, maybe that speaks more to my level of physical fitness. But like,
you know, these people don't get 3-4 days in between matches in 2 days. So it's definitely physically demanding, and it'll be very much the away side this time for the match on Saturday. But it's starting to look like they could pull it off. They just have to finish in the top half of the group to go on. That would be really exciting for this club from Izmir. So I'm looking forward to that. Definitely looking forward to talking about it next week as well. Hopefully more good news then.
Yeah, and you know, it might be exciting because this is probably around the time that we talk about the women's game in Turkey, and I really don't see anybody else really talking about it, so it's kind of like one of our little exclusive features that we have on this podcast. So, I mean, I'm as much of a fan of the women's game as anybody else, you know? I mean, the Women's World Cup I usually watch, and, you know, I know that we've got a league here in the U.S., even though I think the team from D.C. who play in the Maryland Soccerplex absolutely suck, but it's...
You guys in DC are sort of used to dealing with that, though, right?
Yeah, but at least on a tangent off of that, DC United's in the U.S. Open Cup final, so at least I got something to look forward to, hopefully.
Okay. congratulations for that. But yeah, I mean, this is exciting. I mean, you know, you said I was amazed when you told me that only two other teams had actually won, two other women's teams had won in this Champions League competition, and they're from completely different parts of Turkey. I mean, this is the first time sort of the west coast of Turkey gets some representation in the competition. I really hope that it continues to grow in terms of interest.
Yeah,
and stuff.
But the first team that won, which was Trabzonspor's women's team, I mean, I think they got dissolved because, you know, the club wasn't just interested in financing them anymore. And I know they've won the women's league before. So, I mean, that's just the general interest of women's football in Turkey. Maybe it's more of a cultural thing. I guess it really is more of a cultural thing because there's not very many people in Turkey that can envision women playing soccer, you know, football, association football, and things like that. I mean, we're used to it here in the States, you know, with the whole thing about Title IX and you know, the women's national team of the United States being, like, super good. But, you know, when it comes to Turkey, we don't see that. We don't see a general cultural interest in women's football. You know, I mean, considering for a country that gave women's suffrage rights under Kemal Atatürk, compared with some other European countries much sooner in the country's existence than some of the other countries in Europe, you know, I would...
You're basically saying before the United States, well before the United States.
No, it was after the U.S. Yeah, it was after the U.S.
Are you sure? Okay. But I mean, it was.
I'll have to look that up, but I think it's like after the United States granted suffrage, because I think like Turkey, after it got established, it didn't take the country long to approve of women's suffrage.
No, I mean it's just not really our area, is it? But it's definitely an interesting topic.
Right.
But I guess your point is still true. It's just not something that, despite Turkey's relatively positive history towards women, just it hasn't translated into football in a big way yet, I would say. I was just trying to look up to see if Konakbelediyesi has a male counterpart team that's doing anything, because it's kind of interesting in this group. The SFK 2000 team used to have a male counterpart team, but they were dissolved. And, well, we've all heard of Cardiff City, who just got promoted to the Premier League, you know, looking at some of these other teams in the group. But Konakbelediyesi, they might just be the only team from that district that sort of being represented in Europe, I would
think.
Yeah,
and I always have the question of whether people from the Istanbul Big Three teams would even, one, create a women's football branch, and two, whether people would show up. And I really kind of doubt people would show up. I mean, if the FIFA Under 20 World Cup was really any indication, I mean, there is really more of a club supporter culture in Turkey and not really more of a football culture. But I mean, if there was, maybe one of the Big Three teams would probably step up and say, well, we're going to establish a women's football branch. Well, that would be really progressive in terms of the gender in football, you know, gender equality in the sport in Turkey. However, I don't see any of the Big Three really doing that anytime soon. I know Trabzonspor did, but I said earlier that they dissolved the team because I guess they didn't want to fund it anymore. It just wasn't profitable for them. And that's really sad because, you know, at least Trabzonspor, the women's team, did actually pretty well for themselves from the last time I checked.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things where you kind of have to create it to create the interest, but it's hard to create it if there isn't interest or that kind of thing. But it's slowly building. But yeah, Turkey granted its women suffrage just shortly after the United States was sort of doing it, but it was much earlier in Turkey's history than in the U.S.'s history. Turkey, a relatively young nation, but hopefully it's not so long before their women are dominating football, at least in that part of the country, part of the world, I mean.
Yeah, of course, exactly. So I think we've gone. Yeah, I think we've.
I think so too. We've gone everywhere today.
Yeah, I think that's going to do it for this week's edition of Turkish Football Weekly. It was actually a pretty good conversation about women's football there. And this will probably happen again at this time next year. We never seem to talk about it any time else.
Or maybe next week if Konak Belediyesi keeps winning, that'll be
Well, yeah,
interesting.
hopefully they qualify for the Women's Champions League proper. And that probably will
Oh yeah.
start up, I think, later on this year or probably next year. But we'll have to see what happens. Jeremy, thank you again for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I had a blast as usual.
And we thank you for listening to Turkish Football Weekly this week, and we will see you all next time.